This is Internet Marketing. Hello everyone and welcome to another exciting episode of Internet Marketing, episode 176. I'm Andy White.
And I'm Kelvin Newman.
Kelvin, what are we talking about today?
Well, we're actually about, Andy, to commence on what is, I suppose, an opus of beginner's guides to various topics of internet marketing. I know that a lot of you who are listening to the podcast have been doing internet marketing for a number of years, or kind of at least been listening to the show for a number of years, but we're quite conscious that looking back over the episodes, we haven't really done a beginner's guide to many of the kind of fundamentals of digital marketing for quite some time. We recently did beginner's guides to some of the social networks, so like LinkedIn, Twitter and Facebook, but I kind of wanted to go into some of the, you know, more, you know, other channels. So to kind of set the scene, we've kind of got five episodes coming up, and we're going to be covering off in today's episode a beginner's guide to on-site SEO. Next episode, we're going to be doing a beginner's guide to off-site SEO, so the two parts of SEO split there between two episodes, followed by pay-per-click, then performance display, which is a relatively, it's been around for a while, but it's kind of a service that we've been doing more and more at Site Visibility recently over the last sort of 12 to 18 months. So I'm going to be talking a little bit more about that if you're not familiar with it. And then finally finishing off talking about mobile marketing.
You know, it's interesting, Kelvin, because I was talking to someone at a web meeting group recently, and they were saying that, they were not SEO savvy.
Yeah.
But they were kind of saying, I just don't know where to start. All yeah. I want is kind of like a simple list of things, of checklist things to do.
That's kind of what I hope we can do here today, is kind of go through some of the kind of fundamentals of SEO. And I mean, I'll tell you where I'm coming from. This is a day-long training session, and I'm kind of taking some of the elements of that and trying to whiz through them. So what we'll try and do here is we'll kind of cover off all the topics. We might not go into all the detail to explain absolutely everything about it, but hopefully it'll kind of give you a familiarity with some of the terms that are used, a kind of familiarness with some of the concepts, and hopefully kind of give you enough confidence to kind of go off and begin that process of learning about SEO. So, I mean, really, for any kind of SEO campaign, there's sort of like five things you really need to cover off, and I'm going to cover three of those five things in today's episode, and then the final two in the episode that will follow. So the first of those is keyword strategy, then kind of some technical hosting considerations, and then kind of talking about content optimization. And those kind of three chunks are going to break up today's episode, covering off those three areas. So keyword strategy, technical and hosting considerations, and finally content optimization. So really, kind of the very fundamental of any natural search campaign is you need to have an understanding of the keywords that you're looking to target. Now, without that, any SEO campaign that you're going to conduct might be successful, but it's not fundamentally going to be a brilliant campaign. So you need to understand what people are searching for. And you know, there's a number of different ways that we go about our keyword research process at Site Visibility, the agency I work with. So we try and generate a list of potential initial keywords, and we kind of use the following sort of ideas as the kind of inspiration for that. So first of all, we look at the client brief, because in most cases, a client's come to us saying, we rank in number six for this keyword, and we would like to rank number one for it, or we don't rank anywhere for these terms. And, you know, they're not always the perfect terms to be targeting, but they're always a great starting point. We then kind of look at the website navigation, because what you'll find is in a lot of situations, actually the items that you put on your menu reflect the keywords that you want to target quite well. And you know, that's not always perfect, but that's kind of a good way of going. We also look at the existing content. And one thing that I think not enough people do when they're coming up with their keyword research list is kind of look at the current keywords that are already sending them traffic, because there's somewhere you're already having success. And if you're having success in traffic and conversions from a key phrase, despite not actively targeting it and perhaps not even ranking necessarily that highly for it, that's the term you really want to be hitting with your on-site optimization to reflect that, and some of your off-site as well. And additionally, we kind of look at competitors. So we'll ask a client, name your top five competitors, and then we'll look at what they've optimized their site for. So look at the key phrases they've put in their title tags, and look for what your competitors have done similar to some of the recommendations I'm going to suggest that you would make to your site. Next up, you've kind of got to analyze those keywords you made the suggestion. So you've got to ask yourself a kind of a few questions. So one is kind of how many people are searching these terms. There's no point optimizing for a term that might be laser targeted, but only two or three people are searching for it. So you need to kind of go through some process of doing that. You also need to ask yourself how competitive the term is, because actually sometimes you get two phrases which have kind of equal potential, you know, equal traffic, equal potential to make you money, but one of them is far more competitive than another. So you might want to steer your attention towards the less competitive one. You also need to kind of ask yourself about kind of, is there going to be a continual, you know, sense of, is there going to be demand in this keyword ongoing. You know, sometimes we've worked with clients and we've got them really high rankings for a phrase, but people are just searching for that less and less every month. So, you know, we've kind of perhaps not necessarily gone after the best keywords we possibly could, because you want to be going for phrases that are either holding static or kind of, you know, potentially on the up. And also kind of asking yourself a little bit about the audiences and what terms are they searching for.
Is Google Trends a good tool for that, Kelvin?
Yeah, I've actually got two tools that I recommend for keyword research, and there's 101 tools out there, and all of them have their own uses, but to be honest, for most people listening who are just starting out in SEO, there's only really sort of two tools you need to worry about. So one of those is Google Keyword Tool. You can Google Keyword Tool to get that, but we'll also drop into the show notes as well. But the URL is adwords.google.com/select/keyword-tool-external, and that allows you to just put in some phrases that you already have or put in a website that you own or control, and it will make suggestions off the back of that, and you essentially get like a tick box and you can say include this one, don't include this one, and then you can export that as a CSV to kind of use in Excel. Things to look at there is it measures global and local search volumes. Now, when it's talking about local, that's not kind of within your country, it's the country as a whole. So in the UK, the local search volume refers to UK search volume. In Canada, it's Canadian search volume. In, you know, Egypt, it's Egyptian search volume. It's not kind of like in the UK, it's not Brighton search traffic, it's UK as a whole. And also, be aware that kind of this is it's a pay-per-click keyword tool, and by default it'll be set to broad match keywords, which we'll kind of cover in the future pay-per-click episode that we've got coming up. But essentially there's a difference between broad match, where that's something someone typed in mostly that phrase and Google expand upon that, or exact, where someone typed in exactly that phrase. So you want to be concentrating on exact, because that's kind of a little bit better indicator there as well. And as Andy mentioned, yeah, Google Insights is another amazing keyword tool. Now, it's not so good for building lots of lists and suggestions, but what Google Insights does is it really gets the temporal nature, you know, over time of a keyword search phrase.
So Calvin, sorry to interrupt. Google Insights, is that what used to be known as Google Trends?
They're kind of connected, as it were. Okay. So they're kind of the branding's a bit inconsistent and that type of thing. But yeah, essentially Google Insights for search is what we're looking at. Google Trends and Google Insights are largely the same, but Google Insights for search is slightly different. But you know, essentially what you do is you put in a keyword or a key phrase, you specify a country or location, and Google will show you over the last sort of up to about 5 or 6 years the search volume that's there and the trends over time. So you can see, is there a seasonal peak in January for my key phrase, or is actually there half the people searching this month compared to last month, and that's half the month before, and therefore that key phrase might not be one to target. And you can learn all sorts of interesting things there. So, you know, and sometimes they're surprising as well. So, I mean, a classic example, not using Google Insights, but using Hitwise, which is a similar kind of tool. A number of retailers discovered actually that prom dresses, the highest search volume for prom dresses was between, you know, the Christmas holidays and going back to school. Mm. But traditionally they wouldn't have put those prom dresses on display in the store until Easter. But so kind of like, so the logic was, well, if we put it in store in Easter, we'll put it on the website in Easter, and then, you know, they kind of missed out on that peak in search traffic. So there's those types of insights that you can gain using a tool like Google Insights. So they're two hugely complicated tools. We could do like an hour and a half probably on each of those tools individually. But go and have a look at them. Google Insights for search and Google Keyword Tool. Now moving on to kind of some of the technical considerations. One of the issues we come across quite frequently is where there's kind of blocked content pages. So there's a number of ways in which potentially you can say to the search engine, stay away from this site. And, you know, that can be incredibly powerful, but it can also be very dangerous. So potentially you might well find that by no real fault of your own, you've kind of set up a setting on your website that says, Google, don't index me. Now, you'll probably know about that because you get no traffic from Google. But, you know, you just need to check these things, particularly when you're putting a new site live. So we've had a few situations in the past where you might use tools like this to block your test site from being indexed by the spiders, which is kind of, you know, sensible to do. But then you then copy that over to the live server and take with it the code that says, go away, Google. And then for a couple of days, you suddenly start to wonder why your new site's getting a lot less traffic. And you suddenly realize that all the pages of your site are no longer being indexed by Google. And that's not a nice situation to have to deal with.
How long does it take for Google to realize that you've taken those sort of go-away tags off, Kelvin?
Well, basically what they'll do is that they'll just revisit the site. But the problem is that they can be relatively quick to find that tag. Mm. And then afterwards, you've kind of said to Google, hey, I'm not interested. So they're going to come back to you, because they will do, and they'll continue to check. But immediately, you've kind of dropped from being quite high on their list to not being very high at all. So it can take, you know, it can take quite a bit of time, particularly if it's happened at that point when you're refreshing your website as well, because, you know, already Google have got to try and find new pages or new URLs. You know, it's potentially making something that's already a tricky situation to manage from a search perspective very tricky. So the things you need to be looking out there for is your robots.txt file, which is kind of a simple text file that gives you the opportunity to say, you know, give messages to the search engines like ignore this area of the site. So I can't explain that here, but know that it exists and know that you ought to be thinking about what's within that. You can also get like robots meta tags, and also like if you're using like a PHP server, you can use your .htaccess file to kind of specify and block and point search engines in certain directions. So be aware that these are the types of things you need to be thinking about. Is all your content fully indexable by the search engine spiders? He's also got the question of localization. Now, I won't go into too much detail here because this is a question that comes up very frequently in our Q&A episodes. But kind of essentially where the country in which a website is hosted has a, you know, a pretty strong bearing on which, you know, where Google thinks that website is located. But kind of the domain is top, then web hosting, then what you tell Google and webmaster tools. So if you're ever faced with that decision of how do I tell Google I'm a Germany-based website? Simplest answer is get a German URL.de. And then get your server in Germany and then tell Google and Webmaster Tools. And you might not be able to get all three of those, but try and get at least two of them sort of set up if at all possible. Sitemaps are something you hear talked about a lot very frequently, particularly XML sitemaps. So that's kind of an XML code list of the pages on your site that you can submit to the search engine to say, here are all the pages of your site. And that's sort of designed to deal with the fact that sometimes Google won't necessarily be able to know where all your pages of your site are. Now, that can be incredibly powerful if you're having trouble getting pages of your site indexed. But the huge problem with sitemaps is that in most cases, people go, oh, I ought to have an XML sitemap. How am I going to generate an XML sitemap? Oh, I'll type into Google XML sitemap generator, and they use a tool that generates a sitemap. Mm. Now, the huge problem with that is that those tools are essentially trying to do the same thing as Google, right? Which is find the pages of your site by crawling it. So if you've got pages that they can't crawl, Google aren't going to be able to crawl them. They're not there. So the best way to do a sitemap is either by knowing every single page which is in your site, which you might do if you've got a relatively small site, but more practically, you probably want something that's generated by your content management system. So there's plugins for WordPress, there's plugins for Drupal, there's, you know, whatever content management system you've got, try and generate your XML sitemap from there rather than an external tool, because the external tool is going to suffer from exactly the same problems as Google has, and you're not really going to solve the problem by using a similar, you know, you're trying to diagnose the problem using a tool that suffers from the same problems, if you see what I mean. So
yeah, I know where you're going. I can't think of a good phrase either. Have you ever heard of video sitemaps?
Yeah, video sitemaps is a similar kind of idea. So it's essentially all about helping Google know which videos you've got on your site. So yeah, there's a number of different sort of sitemaps. You know, that, you know, videos one, you can kind of, you know, you can get image sitemaps as well, which is a similar kind of thing as well. But yeah, really the principle is all the same, putting your content in a way that the search engines can understand to know where it's all located. Now, the search engines always try and do that themselves, but you have to bear in mind that that can sometimes be pretty complicated. If you've got hundreds of thousands of pages of site, or even just, you know, tens of thousands of pages of your site, it's tricky for a search engine to kind of go to your homepage and then find all the links, then find all the links, then find all the links. And
yes,
a sitemap can just ease that process. But it's not, you know, it's something you need to do. It's kind of something we tick off the list. It's not kind of mission. Well, we always do it because it's not complicated.
Yeah.
But it's probably not going to have the hugest impact on your ability to rank. But it's so simple that it's mad not to consider.
Absolutely.
So kind of moving on to content optimization. So how can you optimize your content to reflect the key phrases that we've already carried out in the keyword research process? Well, one of the places you can include them is in the URL, so the page URL, so that what people type into the bar to get to the page, or the URL that appears when they click on a link. Now, it's kind of historically, it's always been that, you know, kind of the folder structure kind of can act to a certain extent as an indicator of importance, right? So something that's mydomain.com/page is kind of perhaps, you know, you can believe is more of a better indicator that that page is important than mydomain.com/folder/folder/folder/folder/page. Now, it's kind of, it's not quite the same now that how content management systems work, but kind of generally speaking, It makes sense to try and put your most important pages the highest up your hierarchy of pages. And also you kind of want to try and reflect your keywords in that. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean drastically changing the names of your pages, but it does mean if your default is, you know, mydomain.com/1745891, that's not a good URL. Calling it like, I don't know, blue widgets, you know, mydomain.com/bluewidgets or /widgets/blue.
Hyphenated rather than underscore? Do we know?
I think hyphenated tends to be my preferred option. Mm. And, you know, there used to be a lot more debate about whether to go underscore, whether to not put spaces in and all this type of thing. I think in terms of for pages, I think hyphenated is probably the way to go. It just reads better, in my opinion. You've also got the title tag. Now, we've probably heard us talk about this before, but the title tag is still really one of the best opportunities that you've got to send a message to the search engines about what your what that page and what your website is about. So it's worth stating that you've kind of got like you've got 66 characters to play with in your title tag, and that includes spaces, that includes hyphens, it includes ampersands, anything that you put in there that you've got. Now, ideally, you kind of probably want your first three words or so of that title tag to be your main search phrase that you're going for.
So front-load it, in other words.
Yeah, front-load it. Because that's a classic mistake that people make where they'll put, like, the name of their website. So an example I used when demonstrating this before was there was a farming supply company, and they're called Mole Valley Farmers. And then they had, like, a hyphen, farm supplies, hyphen, farming equipment. Now, what I would have said there is straight away, take the Mole Valley Farmers off the front. That's not your most important phrase. You're the only Mole Valley Farmers. Mm. Put farm supplies and farming equipment at the beginning. And actually, I'd maybe even argue to not include the brand in the homepage and instead actually try and use a couple of other variations of the search terms that they'd be going after. So yeah, just in terms of kind of, you've got your 66 characters, which you can count, but 9 to 11 words is good. And don't feel you need to repeat words as well. I'd never repeat a word more than twice, and actually I think in most cases you don't need to do any repetition in a title tag. So because basically Google are choosing the words out of sequence, so you want to try and match the sequence as best as possible. But if you've got farm supplies, farming equipment as your title tag, that would be as well optimized for farming supplies as farm supplies, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You've then also got the meta description. Now, the meta description isn't quite so visible on the page as your title tag is, because your title tag's there in the big blue bar across the top when someone's visiting the site. But it is still incredibly important from a search engine optimization perspective. Now, having your keywords and the like in your meta description doesn't mean that you're more likely to rank. That's not why you optimize it. It's not considered one of the high, you know, ranking factors in that sense. But it is really important because it appears on the search results page. So that's your opportunity to get people to click through to your site. And if you've not got a good meta description, you're going to fight a tough battle there. And actually, some cases we've seen websites that don't rank, they maybe rank position 2 but get quite a high click-through rate because they've got a good meta description. So you've got 150 characters to play with there. I try and do, I suppose, sort of 3 or 4 things really with a meta description. I try to repeat the title tag, so there's the consistency there of the keywords that I'm trying to target. I always try to include the brand in there because I've excluded it in most cases from the title tag. And I also try and include a call to action. So rather than just being, you know, we sell, da 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 da, it's kind of buy now, da da da, you know, something that kind of encourages people to click through and encourages them to make the desired action when they actually go through to the website.
Because I think you've already mentioned this, but this is visible on search in the SERPs, isn't it? The search engine results.
Yeah, so when someone kind of searches for, when you appear on a search results page, you get the blue text, which is your title tag, you get the URL, and you get 2 lines of copy. And this is those 2 lines of copy, and you really want to get that right. A question I get asked very, very frequently is about, well, what should I do with the meta keywords tag? Short answer is nothing. Don't worry about it. None of the major search engines look at it.
Is that the official stance these days?
Yeah, I mean, Google have gone on the record and said that we don't look at it and use it in any of our algorithms. Bing and Bing has kind of said, we look at it, but we don't use it. So from that perspective, I sometimes optimize it because it's merely a case of doing a cut and paste. Mm. So I cut and paste a title tag into the keywords. But if it took any more than those 2 seconds, it's not worth the effort. So don't worry about your meta keywords tag. It's kind of not a waste of time, but certainly not one to worry about.
Is it not even worth having the tag in there at all?
I mean, I think most CMSs come with it as a default field. Mm. So if you're kind of copying and pasting from an Excel spreadsheet, I don't think it takes a huge amount of time to do that. And I wouldn't say turn it off, but, you know, I don't think it's worth worrying, you know, losing any sleep about, oh, should I have my meta keywords saying this versus that? If you've got to spend more than 10 seconds making a decision on it, you've already spent too much time. other on-page elements that you want to optimize are your headings. So on a standard sort of website, you use tags like H1 and H2. And basically, you know, H1 is your strongest, most important piece of text on the body, of the body copy. H2 is slightly less important, and so on and so forth. And just use these like you would bold or italics to draw attention to certain elements of a page that you think are important. And in terms of kind of number of them, I think 1H1, you can maybe get away with 2H2s, 3H3s. I think that's kind of a good rule of thumb to kind of work on those ones there. And those headings should perhaps, ideally, reflect the title tag, reflect the meta description, reflect the URL, and just so you got some consistency there, really. And then finally, the body content. So don't forget, really, and I mean, I've done this a few times in optimizing sites. I've spent ages writing an amazing title tag, you know, really putting my heart and soul into a meta description and all that type of thing. And then actually look at the page, and I've not mentioned those words actually in the proper, you know, the proper copy of that page. So kind of, you know, try and when you've got to the stage of optimizing all those other bits we just talked about, make sure that you've actually got those words on the page, because you'd be surprised how easy it is to go through that entire process and then actually miss the most important bit, which is kind of having the words there that reflect the
search. This is known as keyword density, isn't it?
Well, keyword density is kind of about the amount of times that keyword occurs. And I think that's something not to worry about, like how frequently it occurs. What I think is more important is thinking about keyword consistency. So you kind of, on a page, you have your keywords in the title tag, in the meta description, and it just follows through naturally. And that's just kind of making one page about one search term, I think, is a good idea. You also get alt tags, which are essentially kind of text associated with an image. Now, they're worth optimizing in some situations because they're going to allow you to get image search traffic. So I think it's worth doing, but mainly for accessibility reasons, though. So if someone is on a mobile phone or if they're using a screen reader or any of those types of situations, it's good to include alt text there. But again, if you've got 10,000 images on your site, you're not going to make a huge search impact by writing alt text for all of them. But you might have some, and you might suddenly start ranking for image searches. And I mean, a while ago, we had a fish in the site visibility office, and we kind of had a picture of that fish on our blog because we talked about it because it got super huge. And that was actually one of our biggest referring key phrases for a long, long time from people on image search searching for the
site visibility fish.
Yeah, yeah. And just because we kind of used the Latin name and there weren't very many pictures of it, and I think we got used in dozens of pieces of homework all over the world. But you can do that. So alt text is worth doing, but don't pull your hair out over it. Duplicate content is my final point, really. So this has become more and more of an issue as more and more content management systems have rolled out. And just really try and make sure that any piece of content you've got on your site only appears once. Because try and just spread, you know, don't make sure that you've got lots of pages that duplicate each other. Generally speaking, I think most websites would benefit from having fewer pages rather than more pages. And then go into a lot of kind of issues there about can canonization, and I won't go into that here because I'll make people's brain explode. But basically, simply put, you want all of your content to only be available on your site and only available on one URL. If you've got it available on multiple URLs on multiple websites, you're potentially going to find it a lot harder to rank because you're making life for Google more complicated.
I had someone ask me an interesting question about this. By the way, I apologise for Kelvin's coughing.
Yeah, we both
my
have
coughing.
A coughing fit here today.
You both have a cough.
It's catching. It's catching.
Anyway, yes, this person was asking me, I think they were talking about putting YouTubes on YouTube, videos on YouTube, yep. Get it right, Andy. And also the same video on their blog, and is it okay to duplicate the description they put on YouTube with the description they put on their blog?
I think if it's a part of a page, it's less of an issue, you know, like a couple of sentences. But essentially video, Google can't tell that it's duplicated in a lot of cases.
No, it's the text around the video that they were asking about. Yeah.
And in that case, it's like, it would be better, in a perfect world, it'd be better if those two descriptions and pieces of text around it were different. Now, pragmatically, we don't always have the time to do that. But if you are going to like not vary it, make sure that not all of your pages are exactly the same as the pages on YouTube. Because if Google are given the choice between, hey, here's this piece of text that's a perfect response to the search query, one's on YouTube, one's on Kelvin's website, YouTube's going to win that ranking battle every single time.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of the way that duplicate content tends to, you know, catch people out, because there's another site that's not theirs that they're copying, or maybe not necessarily copying, but sharing, you know, using the same text as. And yeah, the other site's going to win every day of the week in that kind of situation.
Kelvin, take a breath. Relax. That was a real brain dump, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, what I hope I can do there, you know, SEO, on-site SEO, technical SEO, it's, you know, a huge complex area, but hopefully that'll kind of give you some of the things to be thinking about, and you can make a note of a few of those terms and Google them, have a look on our website, have a look on websites like SEO Moz, and, you know, try and get your head around some of those concepts.
And in the next episode, I believe we're doing, is it external?
Yeah, sort of off-site. Yeah, so link building and a little bit about tracking SEO as well.
Looking forward to that. That's goodbye from me, Andy White.
And goodbye from me, Calvin Newman.
See you next time. Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150. And you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.